Today's the second.
Today's February 2nd, it's the work session prior to our regular scheduled board meeting. Solar law. So y'all, everybody got a copy of Brian Reeves' comments?
Yep.
Put that in your mailbox. I talked about those with Al Yeager as well, our engineer. And we've incorporated that into the public record. I think what we're going to do tonight is there's two things that we need to talk about related to the solar law. One is trying to tweak the language so that we might be able to act on that this evening. The other one is we need to talk about the exemption and the position that we're going to take as far as proposing an opt-out or pilot, or there's three choices that we have. Everybody that comes in with a solar complex automatically gets a New York State exemption. So we either do nothing and allow for the exemption for everybody, we negotiate a pilot that can be unique, but the dollar value can be no more than what would be generated in tax dollars related to that project anyways, or we can opt out and just take the tax revenue that would be associated with those projects. So I think what we should do is, I mean, that's, why don't we start with that and then we can go back into the solar law, because that we need to make a decision on that pretty quick. What are your thoughts?
So when you opt out, it's commercial farms, solar farms, and even homeowners.
Everybody.
Businesses.
When you opt out, it opts everybody out.
Everybody.
It opts out residential.
I'm not clear on what that means to a homeowner.
Well, theoretically, I've done some research in other areas that have opted out, and there's been many, many municipalities that have opted out of the solar law. Having a solar panel on your roof doesn't necessarily increase your assessed value on your home, and that's what you're taxed on, is your assessed value. The other point that's worth mentioning is while it's green energy, it's not necessarily an energy saver. It's actually been proven that people that have solar panels or solar generated power are less energy efficient because they're not paying for it. That's neither here nor there. But you know, the decision that we make on solar will probably have an impact on whether or not Lysander is an inviting place to locate a facility. So, you know, we need to make a determination on, you know, what kind of an environment do we want to have here in Lysander as it relates to solar.
Well, just philosophically, I guess why I'm thinking the opt-out makes so much sense is, what difference does it make if, let's just use me, if I put a solar panel on my roof and I don't get any tax break? And I'd like to hear from Teresa just exactly
She'll be here. She's coming in.
But let's just assume it means something, okay? Why should I get a tax break on that solar panel and I don't get a tax break on the new swimming pool I put in my backyard? I'm improving my property. It's not the town or the residents' responsibility to make it easy for me. If I want to improve my property, then I should pay for it, whether it's solar, a fantastic barbecue setup in the backyard, a swimming pool. I don't care. Whatever Teresa raises my assessment for.
All right, let me play devil's advocate.
Please do.
All right. There's the difference between you improving your property and putting a pool in and putting a solar panel on your roof, or theoretically, if everybody put a solar panel on their roof, we would all benefit as far as using less fossil fuels to generate electricity. That's the community thought behind it. If you put a pool in your backyard, I'm sure you're not going to invite everybody to jump in your pool and participate
in. Yeah, but you just said that it doesn't change anything statistically, that no one has shown any kind of energy use drop. So, you know, you can't have it both ways.
Well,
and
no,
it's not my responsibility. You know, if we want to do that, then we should buy solar panels for everybody in the community. Because that's the extension of your argument, Joe.
Well, it's not. No, it's not my argument. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
No, you're devil's advocate.
And
the devil.
Put my bob hat.
The devil's
on.
Argument.
Yeah. No. So
you've exceeded your quota, Joe.
We talked about that today.
I was going to say that.
No. I guess the argument is not energy. It's not an energy argument. It's a fossil fuel argument, and where we get our energy from. That's the community benefit is your carbon footprint, I guess, to use a common term, is reduced. That's the community benefit. That's the thought behind it. And that's why there are incentives. That's why
it's weak.
All right. Well, that's, you know.
To me. I mean, there's three other people that haven't opened their mouths.
Well, I did. I talked to Jamie Rodhams over at the school. And they're passing a resolution for the opt out. They've done an analysis and they feel that these projects should stand on their own because no one has a crystal ball. It's another phrase I'm going to steal from you. No one has a crystal ball, and you don't know if how long the subsidies are going to be available. You know, if the
arbitrary increases, and we're going to have a problem.
I know. No, I won't use
Very
that.
Good.
But it really comes down to, like I say, how inviting. Because for a residential homeowner that's looking to put one of these on their roof or in their yard to help offset the cost of energy, the impact is going to be negligible. The impact is really going to be on a commercial operation that's looking to take advantage of these incentives. And so you have to weigh the community good as far as that overall philosophy as far as encouraging development of green energy to tax revenue generated from the facility.
Yeah, and I guess why I'm not so concerned about the homeowner. I wish Teresa. When's Teresa get here?
Actually,
she's here.
Yeah, we could probably go get her. You want to grab her?
Yeah.
Let me make this statement. Because the homeowner, it sounds like I'm dismissive of their concerns, but they're already going to get a benefit. They're getting their solar panel paid for in part because the federal government is subsidizing this. They're going to have a benefit in lower utility bills. In my attitude, it's good enough, you know, and the fact that we don't have to worry about commercial ventures down the road. I mean, what Jack was saying before was that, yeah, we could not opt out but then make sure that we charge the commercial entity full tax value in the pilot. We could do that, but 10 years from now, someone may forget all about that and give a commercial venture, oh, we have pilots, so here, you can do this. You can give us $200 a year and we'll be happy.
And by the way,
you have the same risk on the opt out.
How?
Because you can opt back in.
Yeah, you can opt in.
Well, okay.
So the next board can just change it around too.
Right, but philosophically, we can make a stand here and say, and this is why we're doing it, and then whatever happens with the future boards happens. So I don't know. I just like the consistency of opting out. Let's hear from Ter. And we may be talking about nickels here.
The residential, I think Teresa will tell you the difference in assessed value is negligible.
Negligible.
It's the big firms.
Why it's moved. For me, the opt out is sending and going along with the school board. Because I was speaking to Jamie this morning. I love the consistency. The school board is going to do exactly what we're going to do. Well, we're going to do exactly what the school board is going to do because I think they've already done it.
Well, what we're proposing, if there's a consensus here in this committee, then. What we'll do is we'll create an opt-out law. We have to actually pass a law. Tony, have you crafted? So what we'd have to do, just the process that's involved, is once we determine the direction that we want to head in, we will have a law crafted. We will advertise for a public hearing at our next board meeting. We'll hear public input, and then we'll vote on the proposed law, yay or nay. So, thanks for coming, Teresa. We had some questions.
One more over here.
So Teresa, just for the audience, Teresa actually went to Watertown for training specifically for solar. Solar is getting a lot of traction and a lot of attention, and specifically in New York State. And so the Association of Assessors crafted a specific training seminar on solar. So I guess what we're considering tonight is crafting a law to potentially opt out. How does that, the question is focused more on homeowners. How does that impact a residential user?
Okay. Once you opt out, it opts everyone out. Not just a big commercial solar farm, but every residential solar exemption. And you can't, because it's a local law, you can't obviously treat them differently. So once you opt out, everyone's opted out.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone that has started construction of solar panels that I have exemptions on my desk for this year, they would be grandfathered in because they were under construction before the law was passed. I put together, just so you will have some information, this is a spreadsheet of our solar panel permits for the last few years since 2014, current, and they list the property address, the tax map number, and the date that the permit was issued, as well as the permit number. Just so you have an idea, if you have a, you know, someone asks a question about how many properties. So that's that information. This information here is a listing of the current exemptions that we actually have on the roll at this time. Residential solar or any solar exemption lasts 15 years. So once they apply for the exemption and they qualify, the exemption is in place for 15 years.
We had a question earlier. What are we seeing on assessed values on homes that are putting these raise up? Is it having a big impact on the assessed value?
Well, it will. The listing that you have shows you exactly what their exemption amount is. And I have another report here that's coming around. We currently have 21 exemptions on our roll as of 2017.
Now, are they grandfathered in?
Yes.
Okay.
They would last for the 15-year cycle, how many years they have left of the remaining 15-year cycle, and then they would be taxable. So you see there are 21 exemptions, and the exemption amount for those 21 exemptions on page 2 is $366,500. The average exemption by that number would be just over $17,000 in exempt value.
Which equated to our rate is ballpark, I don't know the calculator, what's that work out to be?
17 times our tax rate.
You've got it.
Roughly.
So 125 plus 48, right? 125 plus 48.
What are you saying?
So 17,452.
Is the average
exemption.
Currently.
That's the assessed value.
That's the exempt value, yes, yeah. of the panels.
So you say $360,000 total.
Yes, $366,500 for the 21 exemptions.
Which aren't affected by?
They will not be affected by this.
Okay, so let me just do a real life. So if someone has a $250,000 home. Let's take a $200,000 home. And they spend $30,000 on a solar installation. I don't know what they're going for today.
Mm-hmm.
What happens?
It's roughly, and this is just a ballpark, it's roughly a third of what the cost is. That's the total cost, not the cost minus all of the income tax breaks and credits.
A third, that the exemption is a third?
The value. What we do is we value the panels. What does it add in value to that house?
Yeah, so if you spend 30 grand on an array, your assessed value goes up 10 grand.
Roughly.
And that took into account the exemption.
Yeah, and then so you add 10.
You wouldn't pay tax on that.
You add 10, and then 10 is exempted off.
Right.
So the total exemptions right now for the town, it's a total loss
dollar-wise
of revenue is $633 annually.
How much?
$633.
We're not talking a lot.
We're talking minuscule.
Yeah.
Okay. On the residential.
Yeah. On the residential.
Which is why, you can make a case why the maybe we should do something special for residential, but to me it's
You can't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So to me it's not worth it.
The only other option you would have is to negotiate a pilot with the commercial properties,
and
but that's a
case by case,
a lot of work.
That's not worth it.
More work than just the local law.
So that being said, knowing that folks are going to be grandfathered, that folks that may have calculated that when they bought their arrays, knowing that a commercial array has to stand on its own, I'm comfortable with that because we don't know how long the tax incentives are going to be around anyways. I'm comfortable with an opt-out law, but I'm one of five, so Bob, I think, has been outspoken on his position.
Thank you.
Right. I do as well.
I as well.
All right. So, Tony, I'm sorry, Jack?
Can I just ask Teresa one question? I've been looking into this a lot. It was my understanding that, and I'm not saying this to change your guys' mind, I just want to make sure my understanding's right and what you've heard is right. My understanding that under the pilot program, the municipality writes and notifies applicants that they require a pilot contract for establishment of any commercial solar farm. And the town can, if it chooses, establish right in that letter exactly what the contract is. It's not a negotiation unless the town wants to negotiate. They can say it will be for the assessed value of that commercial property as if no exemption existed for a maximum of 15 years. They can set the terms and you don't have to negotiate.
Right. But I mean,
there's not a lot of work involved, right?
Right. But if you're going to do that, if it's going to be that, I mean, the beauty of pilots is that you're flexible in your negotiation. I mean, you can, if you're just going to have a set pilot policy and it's going to be equal to
whatever
the opt out, then you might as well opt out of that and not even deal with any type of official pilot.
Exactly. Only if you didn't want to opt out of everything.
Right.
That's all.
Right. Some municipalities today. I went to the Canton Woods meeting, and Howard Tupper was there representing. He's the town of Van Buren's representative, and mentioned that the town of Van Buren is constructing a solar farm on their dump site. It's been held up, and I don't know what the reasons are, but they've negotiated not to draw power from it, because the power just goes to the grid, but a percentage or a dollar amount to be paid to the town. And I don't know, you may have more information on that. Teresa, have they involved you in that analysis?
I haven't seen any of the documentation. I believe it's going to be a cost savings on the energy that the town buildings use, the electricity.
Now, we looked at that. We spent a fair amount of time last year, especially when we traveled down to New York, investigating solar, because we thought that that might be a good solution for Lysander as well. And talking to the company that I think has a couple proposed projects in the town, it's nowhere near three-phase power, and the cost of getting the energy there prohibits us from taking advantage of that potential revenue. Just wanted to let you know, because we did spend a fair amount of time investigating that last year. Mm-hmm. So is there any other comments related to whether or not the town should opt in or out? Any from the audience? Anybody in the audience want to offer a comment? Okay. All right, Tony, so I think we've got consensus on the board that we'd like to propose an opt-out law, local law. So if we could, you've crafted that. We'll have Dina, if we could add that.
It's already on the agenda.
Is it on the agenda?
Yeah, she called me.
Okay. We'll have Dina
schedule a public hearing for the 16th.
Schedule a public hearing, yep. For the 16th. Where we'll hear additional, any other public comments or concerns. And then at that time, I guess we'll make the call officially. All right. So thanks for coming. Any other questions for Teresa? I don't think that there's anything in the proposed solar law that has tax ramifications, so I don't think, no. I don't think there'll be any questions for you during that discussion, so okay. Thanks for coming.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
And we'll see you later.
Yeah, looking forward to the report.
Beat the snowstorm.
The world doesn't revolve around any one of us, but I won't be here on the 16th, so if you want to do the public hearing that day, that's fine, and I assume you're going to vote on something about SOLA. I just won't be here. If you want to schedule it at another time, I just can't be here that day.
Well, it's not, as long as we have a quorum, I think.
Okay. No, life goes on.
Okay. Are we talking about anything else? So you're going to vote on the solar law, not just the opt-out, but everything about solar.
Well, so tonight...
That's the opt-out.
That's the opt-out. That's a separate law that we have to... It. So
did we get the wording right on...
So we... Do you have... Can you pull that up on your...
Yep.
So here's the thing. We've held the public hearing open for a month and a half, maybe 2 months on solar law, on the proposed solar law, to allow for public comment. The last comment we got that will be submitted was from Brian Reeves, and we talked about that briefly. Now we can't make the law more restrictive without kind of doing a do-over. But I think some of the changes that we've considered to the law are less restrictive. We talked about allowing an AR-40 where it wasn't proposed before, so that's less restrictive. And the only other features that we addressed just gave more detail to some of the conditions that we'd set forth previous. And those aren't more restrictive, they're defined more. So correct me if I'm wrong, Tony, we can tweak the language, mm-hmm. close the public hearing after everyone's had an opportunity to speak tonight, mm-hmm. and then act on the law. Mm-hmm. Okay. So just, we're in a work session, so we run a little looser here in work sessions as far as public comment. Is there anybody in the audience that wants to make a comment during the work session related to solar, something that we need to consider right now that we can maybe talk a little bit more freely?
The only thing I'd suggest is to put whatever you're going to change online before you vote on it, so the public has an opportunity to look at the law the way you want it written.
Yeah.
Right. You can close the public hearing, but I don't think you should come back on February 16th and vote on it without letting people see the law.
Right.
One other suggestion I'd make, Brian brought you an information.
Yep.
And to me, I look at that as the same thing as a public hearing. And his information should be put online and shared with the public also. You know, whether good, bad, or whatever. But that's information that...
Do we list...
You requested from them, and
right. But do we list public hearing comments ever
on the website? No, not that I'm aware of.
Well, they're usually...
They're in the minutes, but as far as actually, like, posting specific public comments for individual public hearings.
I'm not opposed to that.
They should be in the minutes of the meeting.
Yeah, but we don't...
But if you're going to do it for one, you're going to do it for them all. To use that word, but it'll be arbitrary if you just put one...
Or have it attached to the public hearing tonight. You put them in.
Yeah, I mean, like, I want everyone's comments on record. I want those to be viewed. You should be able to view those. So if... I'm not opposed to that.
I'm not either.
You can hold off the adoption of local law until...
We'll just schedule it for...
just put it on the next agenda.
Next one. But hearing no other comments tonight, we'll probably close the public hearing.
Yeah.
So that we can...
If you close the public hearing and then change the law that the public hearing was about...
No, it's...
But only if you make it more restrictive. If you change the amended to make it more restrictive than what you published... Then you'd have to go back and rehear it. But if it's not more restrictive, then you're okay to amend it.
So we're going to work down through those line items that we talked about to show that it's not more restrictive.
It's defining it better.
It's defining it better.
Maybe the thing to do is leave it open. Put your changes in and post them on site. Put it on your agenda to vote in the same night. Close your...
We can keep it open. I've got no problem with that.
Make our changes.
Make the changes, put them in the minutes, put everything on for the next meeting.
Okay.
Close the hearing and vote, yeah.
Thanks for your input. Appreciate it. That's cool. So let's work down through the lingo anyways, as far as some of the specifics that... So, let me get it. Got it. So no changes on the first page. No changes on the second page. No changes on the third page. Oh wait, Tony, you recommended that we have this be a special use permit?
I did, but then I read through it again today. There's the building permits. I think we can put in the building permits if we require something. It could be part of the building permit as opposed to a special permit. All these things have to go through building permit anyway. So I'm not so sure that we need to have a special permit hearing on top of that.
Okay.
I think we can probably just handle it with a building permit.
Advantages and disadvantages of a special use permit, anything?
The advantage is you have more control over it. The board, can say yes or no on a... Building a special permit means you can do the thing in that zone subject to the special permit. If there was going to be, let's say, a business, you can set the hours and say you can't open after 12, that kind of thing. You can do a special permit. With a solar panel, there's not
a lot of moving parts.
The only thing that we've been talking about, I think, that the board has been talking about is what happens when this thing ends or dies. Who's going to pay for that? And I think that could be part of the building permit.
Okay, so that we're going to get to that. Okay, so we're up to page 4.
What does it say on the top of page 4?
Rooftop and building-mounted solar collectors.
They're not numbered.
5.
Oh, wait, on 4, you've got freestanding and ground, you actually specify in here, where is it?
D?
Under D, where...
Oh, yeah, okay.
AR-40, lots less... We basically said the other day that if we were going to do AR-40, we were going to have a minimum of 30 acres, and only 30% of that land could be a solar farm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but these are...
What?
For free... Well, this is for freestanding and ground-mounted.
Yeah, I was going to say, but that's for residential.
This isn't solar farm.
Yeah, this is only for... That's only for residential.
And residential.
Okay. So
but Bob brings a good point. I mean, should item D be amended
for
agricultural residential lots less than 80,000 square feet or residential buildings, freestanding or ground-mounted solar collectors, freestanding or ground-mounted solar prohibited. All right. So you're basically prohibiting freestanding and ground-mounted solar collectors in AR-40.
with lots less than 80,000 square feet.
Okay, that's right. That's consistent. That's consistent.
We wanted a 2-acre lot.
Yep. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Next page. No changes. Really, section 139-94.
Given the discussion and one of Brian Reese's comments on the B10, you can remove that because we're talking about freestanding and ground mounted on-site use for residential and stuff like that. The fencing requirements really only applies to commercial. So that was an oversight on our part. There will be in the site review, we're going to ask for shielding and stuff, but like there's properties right down the road here that have a ground mounted two panels in their backyard. You don't have to put a fence around.
Right, okay.
So 10 could come out if you want.
Is the board comfortable with that? That's a less restrictive change.
To go ahead and exit?
X10. D10.
Should I do track changes on this so you can review it? Okay, so
I've never mastered that, track changes. It confuses me more.
Then don't go there.
I won't.
Do you want me to do it for this?
No, other people can do it. I understand. Okay. Other people, I just messed it up and I
just. He doesn't know how to do it. Yeah.
Okay.
How does one determine that D is not a commercial thing? I mean, it just says freestanding and ground-mounted solar collectors.
Well, I think
it's in the definitions. It's in the definitions.
It's in the definitions, and there's a special section for solar farms.
So as long as it's for personal use,
on-site use, consumption.
All these regulations apply until you get to the last section, which is commercial use projects.
Where does it say that it's for on-site use? Where does it say that?
In the definitions.
Okay, I'm looking under definition under freestanding or ground-mounted solar energy system, and it doesn't say anything about that it's only to be used.
Well, applicability, let me see, hang on.
It's the solar power plant.
Yeah, I get where we're specifying what a solar farm and a solar plant is, but that's later. But I just want to make sure that section D says what you just said it is. And I don't see it. And maybe it's because I'm blind.
You are getting old.
I am getting old.
Getting?
Getting?
You got a lot of
nerve. Go ahead, you can go.
So, Jack, do you remember where it says that? Where it's for on-site use?
Well, we were. If you look
solar collectors.
If you look at the definitions, there's a definition for what a solar collector is.
So, applicability, item D. Solar collectors, unless part of a solar farm or solar power plant, so it separates out solar farms and solar power plants, shall be permitted only to provide power for use by owners.
Where's that?
Item D. 139.92.
139.92 D.
That is in page 3.
D.
Can you put numbers on these pages too?
We don't typically because we send them to
codes.
Codes that the because the formatting changes.
Got it. I think that addresses your concern.
Well, what does it mean to say, but nothing contained in this article shall prohibit collective solar installations or the sale of excess power? What's collective solar installations mean? This is 139-92D.
But nothing contained in this article shall prohibit collective solar
installations or the sale of
excess power. Hang on.
I think that's, correct me if I'm wrong.
Collective solar are solar installations owned collectively through subdivision, homeowner associations, college student groups, adopt a solar panel program, or other similar arrangements. So
where'd you see that?
From definitions.
Collective solar.
The second page.
Oh, okay. All right, as long as it's not a backdoor way for some commercial establishment from...
No, basically what they're saying is...
I think that covers it.
So if you have excess power, you're free to sell it on the grid. If you're producing on-site more power than you're generating, it doesn't prohibit you from net metering.
No, but it does permit you to team up with others that are doing it and go into a little mini business there.
Like an HOA...
Yeah, you'd have to be,
or not for
you'd have
profit.
To be in the same place, otherwise it doesn't make any sense to do. So you'd have to be.
I just, all I'm trying to say is I don't want it to be a backdoor way that some commercial thing can happen without under our noses here, because we've, but it sounds like you're comfortable with this. Very uncomfortable.
Do we have to take 10 out, though? I mean, do we need to? Because it says in all other zoning districts, freestanding, or all other zoning districts, all of them.
If they're over 80,000 square feet, but the guy that's got, so we don't want to make the guy, the farmer, I mean, if he's got cows, he's going to want to do it anyway, but we don't want to make the farmer that's,
deer.
Yeah, we don't want to make the farmer that's got 10 ground-mounted solar panels out behind his barn have to put a fence around him if it's already screened by his barn and he's not worried about security. What does it matter to us? The only reason we would do it for the commercial application is because you have three-phase power running to the site, so you have a hazard, a public hazard. That's why you would want it for the commercial applications where residential and on-site use stuff is.
I think that's reasonable.
It's not as big a concern. You don't have that public safety issue with three-phase power.
Okay. Good.
All right, so safety, there's no changes in safety. If you get down to section 139.95, page.
That starts on page 5 and goes into page 6.
Yep.
Shall be permitted. So the first page, the last section of page 5, or page 6, sorry, we want to say... I'm assuming
it says ag districts.
Ag shall be permitted in ag districts and AR 40 districts.
Exclusive of incentive overlay. Because they're all AR 40.
Yep.
Right. Take out incentive zones. Now we mentioned PDDs as well. But I don't think we need to mention PDDs because...
The way this is written, they're already excluded.
They're already excluded, and a PDD is a separate legal entity.
It's a separate zoning. It's a separate... PUD is a separate zone classification above and beyond the AR-40.
And any modifications have to be approved by the board anyways, correct?
Right.
So that's covered.
Okay, so A... talks about what we had presumed would occur in an agricultural district, a solar farm. Solar farms and solar power can be located on 20 acres with 50%. Do we need another?
Yeah, that's clause? What. So we're going to say solar farms and solar power plants in agricultural districts.
In A, you're going to say that, right?
In yep. Ag, yep.
Yeah. Districts. Can only be located in. And then we're going to... Tony, is the correct way to do this to insert an additional sentence right on A, or should I do a separate bullet letter designation?
You're going to say solar farms, solar plants in agricultural districts.
Can only be located, and then we're going to do another sentence... that says solar farms and solar power plants in AR 40 districts can only be located on lots of.
You can.
It's the same subject.
Yes.
You can just add the sentence at the end of A.
Okay.
You don't need to do another.
But it's 30 acres with a maximum coverage of 30%.
Correct. That's what we agree.
In the first one?
Why did you go to 30% on the coverage?
30 acres, because that's the same, it's basically the same lot coverage that you could put on a 20 acre site. It's the restriction is on the size of the parcel.
So if you had a, if you had,
so we wanted a larger plot requirement or in AR 40 than in agricultural.
Okay.
So
they are basically saying if you want to put a 15 acre footprint.
Typing, forget about my secretary does it. I don't know how to do this.
You'd have to have a 45.
Forty-five acres.
Yeah.
You can't just add a
size. 15 acres, you'd have to have 50 acres.
Or whatever it is, it's substantial.
Oh, well, somebody else figure this
out. Well, it's just different. It's, so what we...
On the street, type it.
My interest in it really... I wanted there to be an opportunity in AR-40 of some point. I didn't want, you know... a farmer who happens to be located in an AR-40 who has lots of land and maybe he doesn't have good land in certain areas, it's not productive, you know, shouldn't be excluded because he's in an AR-40 area. You know, there, I think there's enough areas and nooks and crannies in the AR-40 that could facilitate such a facility without having a huge impact from a visual perspective. The other thing, again, and I've said this a couple times and I'll repeat it, you know, this can also help help us in our, you know, addressing land that's going from agricultural to residential. You know, a lot of times, sometimes you'll have a farmer who's in a position where, you know, he's selling land because it's either part of his retirement or he's not making it as a farmer or whatever. If there's an opportunity to generate additional revenue, I just wanted that opportunity to be there. I didn't think that just because you happen to be in an AR-40 area that you didn't have some opportunity to take advantage of this. So I think this is a good... you know, it's less restrictive because we're adding a zone, not taking one away, in AR-40. We're just making the requirements a little higher as far as the overall land mass that's required to consider. All right, so that addresses that. Did you get that?
Yeah, it's in there.
And then obviously Tony's going to review it.
Yeah, 30 acres, 30% of the lot, max coverage.
Okay. Item B, I think we were fine with that. Item C, I think we were fine with the fence height. I mean, unless you get some super deer.
I can jump.
Yeah. eight and a half feet.
Do you want to put not less than, so that if you want to make it higher, you could?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, that's good.
Yep.
See.
Yep, not less than 8.5 feet.
Yeah. We're doing this because we think 8.5 is a deer jumping height.
It will prohibit a deer jumping.
Okay, there's got to be a number that the College of Forestry knows for sure.
I think that's where that came from. This country.
All right.
And I don't not so interested in what, putting barbed wire
what that's
up there.
Mean is an 8-foot
right.
Fence.
I agree with you. It would make it look like a prison.
But we talked about not having that.
Not having the
overhang. Not having the overhang.
Yeah, we don't have the overhang on it. We don't have the just 8.5 foot height. I think that the
look like a prison.
Yeah, yeah, just 8.5 foot height.
Are we talking chain link fence?
Yeah, that's fine.
So if it comes in 8 foot length.
I mean, I think 8 foot is technically the deer height. At least that's what I've seen on the game preserves and stuff.
8.5 is an odd number.
Well, exactly. From because it's eight. It's typically, you know, four, six, eight, ten.
I did some research. Some municipalities allow for a certain clearance under the fence to allow for
something
smaller
trapped
animals
in there to get out.
Yeah, to get out.
Or whatever.
Or to just pass through an area.
Snakes, reptiles,
that kind of defeat. There's a rat with chickenware to keep them off.
Chickenware? I mean, I think 8.5 is if there's an issue with that, then
yeah, we can make it simple and just say 8 feet.
Well, that's what I was thinking, because if the rolls are 8 feet tall, then how are they going to get this other 6 inches without putting something at the top that we don't really want to see anyhow?
Is this like a question that can just be posed?
Can we just make it 8 feet?
And say, you know,
I'm okay with 8. I mean, I think 8 feet is more than adequate.
Well, as long as
when you buy a chain link fence, like Al said, you buy it in 4 foot rolls, 6 foot, 8 foot, or 10 foot. 8.5 is odd.
Yeah.
And you're going to make someone put a...
Why are we just putting out less than 8 feet?
You're going to make someone put a 6-inch.
Yeah. Right, right. We're going to make the cost of it's going to go up.
A string of razor wire.
We're putting out less than 8 feet.
That's what you're going to end up with.
No, we don't want that. Yeah.
Right.
We don't want that. So let me just see something. Let's see what they're doing. In the town of Ulster.
How big are their deer?
They got moose there?
They can't jump.
Right. Moose probably go through it.
Right. White-tailed deer can jump almost 8 feet high, so effective upright fences should be this height.
8 feet?
8 feet.
There you go.
Oh, there you go. 8 feet.
That's good. Let's make it easy on
them. Who's that?
Google. Mr. Google.
Mr. Google.
I don't know. It's just University of UVM. What's UVM?
Vermont.
Vermont. Okay.
All right. It's not even mentioned in...
I think we should make it 8 feet even.
Okay.
Let's keep it somewhere.
Just not less than 8 feet.
Got it.
All right. Not less than 8 feet.
There you go.
Nicely done.
Okay, continuing on. Landscaping and screening. Obviously, that's important.
And D, we were just talking about fencing. I hope someone doesn't read that and say, Butler fence over the fence, that the manufacturer of the solar system is on the fence.
Yeah, the manufacturer's or installer's identification.
The manufacturer of the solar equipment,
not Butler Fence.
Right.
That's advertisement.
Put the word solar there.
Yeah.
The solar.
I mean, you'll probably see a Butler Fence.
Oh, yeah.
On there.
Yes.
But that's what they'll think if you don't specify solar, that they'll think that's all we need.
And then some of this, I'm sure, planning board can address as far as...
Be part of the site review.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. E, yeah.
Yep.
Should be reasonably possible.
What's that for the E, Tony?
Decommissioning.
Just reasonably under E.
The extent reasonable.
Reasonably.
Yeah, not reasonable. So we do say appropriate landscaping or screening materials may be required to help screen the solar farm or solar power plant. So is that if it's in the middle of a already field. Wooded or brushland area? I mean, do we have that may in there so that they don't have to?
Yeah, so I guess...
Well, that would be at the discretion of the planning board when they do the site before. That's why it says appropriate. I mean, if there's already a natural screen, wouldn't need it. That's right.
Don't bulldoze it and build them.
Please.
Yeah, we took the trees down to make room for the fence.
Don't laugh. That's what DEC made Onondaga County do along the west shore of Onondaga Lake, the Red Maple Swamp. Clear it.
So they plant trees.
And plant more trees and then plant trees again. I'm not kidding you.
I'm not surprised.
Wow.
Try building a trail with grant money.
Yeah.
Well, especially grant money administered through the DOT, because the DOT really doesn't want to see that money go to trails.
You'll see those guys. If you're driving on 690, just north of the of Nine Mile Creek coming into the water, you'll see all these new trees planted in that swamp. Those are the new trees.
Most of them died. They had to replant all those. Yeah. All right. All right, so the average height of a solar panel array on any given lot shall not exceed 20 feet. Solar farm and solar power plant panels and equipment shall be surfaced, designed, and located so as not to reflect glare to adjacent properties and roadways. On-site power lines shall, to the extent practicable, be placed underground, which will also be part of the infrastructure that would have to be removed.
I would say shall be placed underground.
Shall be.
I would say shall. I mean, what do you think, Tony? Just because if it's above ground, you got a more of a potential hazard for.
You reading I?
Yeah.
I'm saying part of that shall, to the extent practicable, be placed underground. What are you saying?
I say it shall be placed underground.
Be. Even to forget about to the extent practicable.
Yeah. Okay. Just from a safety standpoint.
Okay.
It's much safer to have a three-phase power underground than aerial onto a private site.
Now, is that going to make it more expensive in order to remove it? If everything's
in conduit,
no, it shouldn't.
Yeah, if it's in conduit,
rip it out.
Yeah, just pull the wire right out of the conduit.
Okay.
Once it's disconnected from the grid,
doesn't really matter either. I mean,
it's not our cost.
Right. And for the safety.
No,
J.
I agree.
J. The following requirements shall be met for decommissioning. Okay, so this is where we need to add some. So we proposed taking out one and replacing it with the site shall be restored to as natural a condition as possible within 6 months of removal.
I thought we made three number one and then made two.
You've got to leave number one in there in some form.
Isn't it in three, Jack?
Pardon?
Isn't it in item number three?
It's repeated in three, we believe. And it's different. There's a...
It says, in addition, should the solar system be non-operational for any continuous six-month period...
Yeah, there's a contradiction there, yep.
And if
it's
not renewed, the approvals granted are null or void and shall be decommissioned subject to a new approval. And if not, then we go to the site, you know, it should be decommissioned and removed under the new conditions that we're going to establish. So isn't that saying it there, Jim?
One says, I believe, one says...
1 year, one says 6 months.
One says 6 months, and one says 1 year.
Yeah, let's cut and paste three into one, right?
Well, I think you still had, yeah, so we had two. The site shall be restored.
I see what you're saying, Bob.
Yep.
So let's cut and paste three into one, right? So three becomes one?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then we need to enhance two.
And we're also adding to number three, though, Guy, right? Because what we're saying is we're not going to say not less than $50,000 at a price to be determined by an on-site.
Right, right. So let's finish two, and then we'll get into what we've proposed for the verbiage in three.
Oh, what did you do? I shouldn't have done that.
What'd you do?
He deleted it.
No. I for some reason, it X'd out two when I pasted 3 to 1. Nope, not that.
Undo.
Got it.
Hit the any key.
Okay, so we're on two, which is going to be one. Right?
No. One, three became one. Two is standing alone, but don't we want to change the language in one?
All right. So if three is becoming one, let's focus on, I guess, on the on
the new number one.
On the new number one.
Yes.
So we're totally omitting.
So get rid of in addition, because it's not following.
A reclamation bond
to be determined.
Yeah, so we're getting rid of in it because it's
a reclamation bond in the amount of.
It wasn't an amount. It was amount to be determined.
A reclamation bond to be determined by a third party demolition. Company.
Of the town's choosing. A reclamation bond in the amount of. In an amount to be determined
by the planning board or whatever.
What? Could you require the applicant?
Yeah, we don't want. We don't want. We want them to provide us.
Right.
Which will be verified by our engineer.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. So a reclamation bond in the amount to be determined by a third party, local third party.
Demolition.
That's different than what you said.
Contractor.
At the cost.
Shall be filed.
What did I say? What do you think?
You're going to require the applicant, as part of the process, to submit an estimate of the removal cost. And then that estimate will be verified by a third party, town. You should require him to give you an estimate of what he thinks it would cost him to remove that, because he's the one going to be responsible for removing it, and he knows the actual installation.
Well, no, with a bond, he's not responsible. We're responsible.
Huh?
If we call the bond, it's not him that's responsible, it's us. So we would want to have our own third-party demolition contractor provide us with a quote at prevailing wage rates.
20 years, 30 years down the road.
Well, no, we're going to have
that reviewed every 5 years.
Every 5 years, Andy.
Yeah.
To keep the facility operational, that'll have to be re-upped every 5 years at their cost. But they should provide. I mean, I guess we could do it. We could have a third party.
Yeah, well, I don't know why you're. I mean, if I was the developer, I'm going to put a cost that's as low as possible.
Exactly.
If I get a bond, it's going to cost.
I just wanted as little work as for us as possible. But if we get the estimate, make him pay for the estimate.
Yeah. Yeah. So a reclamation bond in an amount to be determined by a local third-party demolition contractor at prevailing wage rates shall be filed with the town clerk to cover the cost of reclamation of the solar system installation. I'm going to add installation in there.
Make sure it covers in there surface and subsurface.
Yeah, that's defined in.
You have to use to cover.
It's going to be in two.
And below ground, any and all.
Right.
Use the word any and all.
Were we going to discuss that and put that in item two after this? The site shall be restored to as natural condition as possible within 6 months of removal. This includes, but is not limited to, underground equipment. Blah, 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 blah.
Well,
I think we can handle it this way. I got an idea. So, shall we file the town clerk to cover the cost of reclamation of any and all solar system components? So that covers anything.
I would still say above and below ground.
Yeah, you can add that. You can be redundant.
Yeah, might as well.
Whether above or below ground. Whether above or below ground.
Okay. So, to cover the cost of reclamation of any and all solar system installation components, whether above or below ground. Okay.
Joe.
So, is it?
That item two?
Yeah.
That was actually the second phase. The first phase is described above of the 1 year period, and that triggers removal, which Al's addressing now. Once everything is removed from the site, then they have 6 months to restore the surface of the site.
We thought that was an inconsistency.
Less inconsistent.
It wasn't inconsistent. It was two stages. But you can make it one. Huh?
So let's change what's one. We'll keep what we just made changes to one there. Where we just moved one, we'll change that to two. So we're going to reject change. Okay. And the change in number automatic form will be perfect. So solar farms and solar power plants which have not been active and continue to service for a period of 1 year shall be removed and, removed at the owner or operator's expense.
Now that owner and operator, there was a question raised about that.
Parent.
In our mind, when that was crafted, that's the owner of the solar farm, not the land, not the
right.
And the operator of it.
The energy
can
company,
be two different
not the landowner.
So you might want to...
So it removed at the owner of the...
Owner or operator of the solar farm.
Yeah, not the owner of the land, but
right.
the farm.
If you want to flip it around, you can
yeah, that shall be removed at the owner or operator
but
of the solar farm's expense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's good to have this many eyes on it, too.
Yes.
Okay.
And then we mentioned in there the 5-year review, the planning board. Was that the entity we want? The planning board shall review the bonding requirement every 5 years after issuance of site plan approval? Do they typically police?
I would.
Well, they get. Teresa,
they'll do the site review and all that. I would think it would be the
code, town board.
The code or town board, somebody.
Yeah.
On the
well, so
I'd say the code. Yeah, Jack makes a good point. The code enforcement officer.
Yeah.
Code's office,
the
but
code's
it,
office.
It usually those records though reside in the clerk's
right.
office.
Right. But the bonds are required to give us notification if one is going to expire.
Yeah.
And they usually tell the town clerk.
Yeah.
All right. So maybe
she gets
maybe
a
the clerk's office.
Well, no, she gets a notice and then forwards
and then,
it
and
on
then
to codes the codes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Is a bond transferable if they sell
them? No. Whoever the new owner would have to provide a new bond, right, Tony?
A new yeah. bond, and yeah. also with it should be a new estimate for the demolition removal.
Well, that would going to be updated every 5 years anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So a new owner would require a new bond and a new estimate associated
yeah.
with that, right? Yep.
So do you have the wording about the every 5 year?
Yeah, the codes office shall review the bonding requirement every 5 years after issuance of site plan approval.
No, we're going to say that there needs to be a new estimate done for removal every 5 years. And a new bond based on...
So you shall require a new... Okay, so I didn't catch that.
Updated estimate every 5 years.
Every 5 years.
Okay.
Shall obtain...
And the goal here is 30 years hence, we're going to have enough money to cover any and all removals. Or whatever time period. We're never going to be left holding the bag.
Updated... The codes office shall obtain an updated demolition estimate from a local third-party contractor at prevailing wage rates every 5 years.
Well, the operator will pay for it. That estimate.
Yeah. Through escrow account.
Through escrow account.
Yeah, we any
building permits.
Yeah, as long as they're paying for everything.
The codes office shall obtain an updated demolition estimate from a local third party demolition contractor at prevailing rates every 5 years after.
And that will be the requirement for a new bond based on that amount if the number has changed. So I don't know how you want to wordsmith that.
Does that have your prevailing wage?
Yeah, because if it's a bond, if we pull the bond, it's us doing the work.
Okay.
Yeah, if we do the work, yes. If they do the work, no.
They do the work, no. But if we get to a point where we're pulling the bond, it's us doing the work.
Okay.
So the codes office shall obtain an updated demolition estimate from a local third party contractor prevailing rates every 5 years after issuance of site plan approval.
Yeah, why not leave shall review the bonding requirements and obtain an updated estimate, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, we could do that. Shall
catch y'all.
But I want to make sure that estimate goes into a new bond. If or however you do bonds. I don't know how you do them, but if the estimate today was $50,000 and 5 years from now it's $67,000, I want to make sure we have a bond in our hands for $67,000.
Typically, bonds are good for certain time periods.
Yeah, so that's how they calculate. At the end of 5 years, their bond is gone.
Okay.
So they got to get a new one. So the question is, what are we going to make them get the new one?
Well, that's what I want. I want to make sure that we're not just getting an estimate. We're going to use that information to require you to get
right,
bond.
Right, right. I think that's covered.
So to establish, I think I know how to word this, to establish an updated bonding requirement.
Yeah.
I think I got a run-on sentence there, but I can fix that later.
Great.
And then obviously there's a reset. Let me know when you're set. I think we did it. And the rest of the lingo is pretty standard stuff. The appeals process.
Yeah, well, I got a question on the appeals process.
Okay.
It says if a person is found to be in violation of provisions of this local law, appeals should be made in accordance. Appeals of what? What happens if he's in violation?
I think
it should say if he's in violation, his permit is revoked. He can appeal that, but other than that, what is he appealing? He's in violation.
Can you make an appeal to the ZBA?
To say what? I'm not in violation?
True. Yeah.
That's it.
No, you know? It's getting so key to it.
If we find him in violation, just like you do with any other ordinance, hey, you're in violation, your permit's going to be revoked. If you want to argue about that or, you know,
appeal it,
and then you can do that. But, I mean, if he's in violation, there's going to be some consequence.
Exactly.
Right.
And I think you can put in there, you can even put if you want, the permit may be revoked instead of shall be. If it's a minor violation, you may be able to negotiate with them and say, fix this and you're fine.
Right.
If it's a major violation, you may say, hey, your permit's revoked.
So if a person is found to be in violation of the provisions of this local law,
the permit
may be revoked.
The
shall. Permit granted
shall be. Shall be.
No, you may want to do maybe. Shall be means you got to.
You got to do it.
As I say, if it's a minor violation,
you might not want to yank it.
Yeah.
Yep. REVOP. Yeah, that's right. Shall be revoked.
All violations
maybe.
Must be resolved.
Maybe
in 30 days,
revoked.
Is that, oh, maybe.
The timetable also for you to be able to revoke. But just say revoke.
The timetable.
When there for remedial action makes it more difficult. I need more time. If there is a violation, put a limit. They have 30 days to resolve it, and they couldn't. If they're not resolved in 30 days, your license could be revoked.
I think that makes sense.
I like that.
Can you say? I'm sorry, Andy. I didn't get all of that. So
put a time limit on it.
Okay. So if a person is found to be in violation of the provision of this law,
and you can put if you want to do it the way Andy said. And such violation is not cured within 30 days from notice, then. Is that right, Andy?
Yeah, I think that's
if true. Violations are not
cured
within 30 days.
Clears it up a lot for Tony if he has to take action. There's a limit.
30 days.
Notice of violation.
Right.
All right, so when you're done, let me know because I want to play this out.
Okay, so I think I'm done.
All right, so I own one of these plants, and my fence was taken down by a tree. And then you come to me and say, you're in violation, your fence is down. You got 30 days to fix the fence. I wait 30 days, and I don't do it.
Permit's revoked.
Permit's revoked. Is there an appeals process through the court? I mean, we're not doing anything that will extend the process by allowing 30 days, right? I mean,
no.
That's what I'm afraid of. I don't want to.
Well, they can always ask for an extension. You can always grant it.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I say if you use the word may as opposed to shall, it gives you the flexibility to do that.
Okay.
So you say, hey, you got 30 days to do this. If it's not done, we're going to revoke your permit. So if you can't do it, you better tell us now or it's going to be revoked.
Okay.
And we had an analogous situation with what's his name in the road. Fixing.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's the same situation.
Yeah.
We were very flexible.
Yeah, you don't want to close a guy down necessarily.
But eventually we had, you know, Fisher Cup Bakery.
Yeah.
But we
kept giving up extensions and finally got it done, but it took a while.
Makes sense.
Fees.
You got to set those.
Yeah,
So we just have to update. Do we need to do a local law?
You can just do a
resolution. That's by resolution.
Resolution, yeah.
So we just need to update. I mean, it's typically, I mean, we can just do the fees for building permits based on our standard building permit fee of value of project.
Whatever you want to set them at. That's your.
I mean, that would be the simplest way to do it.
It's your prerogative.
So what we've done here is, if you want to build one of these things, we're not going, except for a permit fee, which is going to be reasonable, we're not asking them to put any big chunk of money aside except for the bond.
Correct. I mean, they have to put up a fee for the site plan review planning board level.
Right.
But we're not
asking them to put $50,000 aside, because we've got that covered in the bond.
And we need to determine the fee?
Or we could just say fees for building permits shall be in accordance with published building permit fee schedule, published town of Lysander building permit fee schedule, right?
Do we currently have one?
Yeah.
Because that would be a commercial.
Commercial. Yeah, just commercial building
permits.
Covered. So we're going to say fees for all building permits required pursuant to this local law shall be, I mean, do we even have to say anything? So it reads, the fees for all building permits required pursuant to this local law is required by chapter section 139, article, I don't know, I got to look up what our fee schedule is, shall be paid at the time of each building permit application.
It's
already determined.
We just need to let them know where the fee schedule is.
Yeah, so you just got to pull that article in for the zoning code.
Yep.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Severability.
I'm gonna actually put X out the three X's there and track changes so I remember that.
And you'll send this draft out to all of us?
Yeah, and then post it
on site, online.
Servability, nothing there. Conflict with the laws.
I like this. I think it was we took the time.
Save this and.
It's a good law.
Actually, I'm going to do a file save as.
Yeah. Well done.
Any other comments before we? All right. Well, no, we got a little bit of time. I'm all messed up here.
Policies?
Okay. Yeah. So let me just set you up as far as for the audience and the discussion that we're going to have here. So over the course of the last year, through public comment, we've determined that there's a need to either enhance or put in place specific policies related to.
Okay. You have copies too.
I got a copy of that.
You got a copy?
Yep. To our highway department. Specifically, we're looking at a millings policy, a mailbox replacement policy, a personal use of company car policy, and work on private property. And so the highway committee, relatively newly formed, has been working with Gene, Al, Dan Picardo, Pete Moore, and Bob Ellis to craft these policies, and we're going to be reviewing some drafts of these proposals tonight.
So we spent some time, we hashed it over. These are rough drafts. Read them. Next meeting, get questions, or if I can clarify.
Yeah, we'll put it back on the work session again for next meeting and
annotate them.
We don't have the mailbox one completed yet. So you got three out of the four, right?
Yes.
I didn't like the county, so I'm just going to tell you now.
The county
ridiculous. I can't believe they even functioned.
Yeah, that's like a mailbox replacement service.
Thought
is what
right.
it
we
is.
Thought it was going to be
what are they doing?
Quick and easy.
They just
replace
all at their expense. Whether it's from negligence of not maintaining your post or.
We got to start from ground zero on that one.
So if your mailbox is old, you tell the driver.
Yeah. No, you just wait until the weight of the snow pushes it over, and then
a new one.
Yeah, we give you a new one.
So you want us to take these back and we'll talk about them next time?
Or yeah, we can do that.
Yeah,
this is the first time you're looking, unless you want to.
The couple of them are short. I mean, the accessing private property is a really short one if you want to look at that.
One of each. Whatever you're going to talk about first, go down the list. Well, let's do. Go ahead.
This is asphalt milling.
Milling?
Okay. Milling. Just real quick, Van Buren has a policy. We looked at it.
Very extensive.
Very extensive. They are into trying to sell minimal truck orders to as many homeowners as possible. We think we are very fortunate that we have some larger companies in town, like
Gibson Express.
Gibson Express.
Abbott.
CNY Cryos.
Abbott, Reeves. So we put a policy together here that says, first of all, we're selling surplus millings. If Gene needs them, they're not for sale. First and foremost, we use it. If we have leftovers, we're selling them for $2 a ton. We can't guarantee their quality, their compact, any of that stuff, because it's just being ground up, put in a truck, and being delivered.
No.
Or they take it.
Yes.
What we like best is for Gene to coordinate with Gibson, Reeves, Abbott, CNY Crops, and say, hey, the best thing to do is have your truck show up at the construction site. The milling machine is grinding, and he's going to be dumping it into your truck. And then you can take it away and go. That's the $2 a ton.
Let me ask you a question. Will the company doing the work have an issue with that?
They haven't.
They don't care. As long as there's a truck in front of the mill and that mill can keep moving, that's all they care about. They want production. So the more trucks they got in front of it, the better.
Okay.
Yep.
So
if none of those potential buyers are available or want it, obviously Lysander Highway trucks will be there to haul it to our stockpile yard, which is on 60 Road. And we're going to dump it there and stockpile it. What happened last year, and this is a good what if by chance someone starts seeing our trucks flying down the road and said, hey, Gene, how can I get some of those millings? If it's feasible, if it's cheaper, if it's a shorter distance than running to 60 Road like it was for Abbott's, then we will deliver and dump in their yard for an additional fee of $3 hauling fee. So that's
three per ton?
$2 per ton plus $3 per ton. They're paying $5 to have it delivered. And if we're on their property dumping stuff, there is a form here, that indemnification form, that releases us from any damages done to their driveway.
I have one question for you, Bob.
Shoot.
You're saying how much, if you got it on the truck and bring it out to me, how much am I going to pay?
If we deliver it, it's additional $3 a ton.
So it'd be $2 plus $3. $5.
Only if.
One thing I can tell you is Gene just dumped his last load at our farm, if that's the case. I think you need to talk with Gene about that one. Am I right, Gene?
I think this thing has gotten totally out of shape and full of bureaucracy.
Well, you're on the committee, Gene, so fire away.
You have a committee that's writing their own rules.
Let me jump in. If you read the wording, in the event that the town of Lysander Highway trucks are hauling surplus asphalt road millings from the construction site to the 60 Roads stockpile, and a purchaser's dump location is more convenient, meaning a shorter distance, more economical for the town of Lysander, and it's approved by Gene, the highway superintendent, then the surplus millings can be purchased and delivered at additional cost of $3. Hauling out to Reeves Farm is probably not closer or more economical than 60 Road.
I think setting at $3, you're confining me. I had no idea that, you know, if someone's come spur of the moment and say they could use them things, and they, what would it cost to go to Timbuktu, or the price will be dependent on where Timbuktu is in relationship to where we're milling.
That's not this, what I'm
saying. Andy wanted some
Gene, you're the one that said you charged Abbott an additional $3
a ton. Because it was right next to the milling site.
Exactly.
It was not out of the way. It was next door.
You're precluded from delivering if it's not shorter to there.
That's what I'm saying. You don't put that $3 in there. In other words, it's got to be in there.
All right. Why don't you guys, everybody read it. If you don't understand it, we'll debate it. We'll discuss it.
Yeah. Okay. Make your own comments on it.
Okay.
Yep.
And we'll start getting $3 a ton for the stuff you bring out there, Gene. And I'd like to continue just like we are. Gene will tell you that what's like over here when they took the bunkers out, those are all over there. We take those in. He gets brush, anything else, Christmas trees, they come out. We've got legal, clean place to dump and fill like that.
This part.
And we've done this for several years.
My driveway ended up there.
Huh?
Yeah. You've been taking a lot of fill out there.
Everything, you know, pretty much, that was sticking out of Tri-County went out there also.
What are you filling, the Grand Canyon out there?
Pretty much.
I'd like to make a request of our highway superintendent that you take a, you put your notes on this. I'd like to see them in writing.
I had no idea that they were going to be in front of you tonight, but I will put my notes on it, and then you can have them back.
That'd be perfect.
Okay.
You know, review them. I mean, they're still in draft form.
So we've got 5 minutes left, which is probably enough time for us to get set up and get ready for the meeting. Go through the other ones, and then we'll keep that on the work session for next time.
I just want to commend that committee for putting that stuff together.
Yeah.
Nice. Great job, Bob. And Peter.
Good?
Good.
Great job. Awesome. Okay, so we're going to stop this? I don't know what we do. Stop? You hit stop?